the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Okay, we're here with Rod Underwood. And, you know, first of all, let me get it right. I'm going to get it right this time, Rod. Your resume, at least from a coaching perspective, he's coached youth teams and youth academies throughout the United States. He coached over in Atlanta, also was part of the Portland Timbers youth system, and most recently was part of the coaching staff within the whole umbrella, which is Sacramento Republic. Rod, glad to have you here on Beyond the Pitch. First of all, I just want to let you know that if there's a person that I'm envious of, it's you right now, because if you know, you're obviously not in Miami, but you're in one of the places I would like to be right now, which is Montego Bay. How are things over there, man?
Oh, good. Things are good. I mean, it's a beautiful place. It's when you think of an island, you think, okay, it's going to be beach everywhere, but it's very interesting. I'm looking out I'm on my terrace right now. I'm looking at the mountains, and then if I look in another direction, I look at, I can see the ocean. So it's very, very, very nice place.
Oh, well, I mean, you don't have to be so you know, braggadocious about it. I mean, come on. I mean, but I mean, I'm happy for you. I mean, from a personal standpoint, I'm very happy. And what I forgot to mention, you're now the head coach of Montego Bay Football Club. I mean, how did that happen? I mean, how the connection from you know, being an assistant coach and a youth director or assistant director, one of the many hats you've worn within the U.S. soccer coaching realm, to go to Jamaica and become the head coach there. How did that work out? How did that happen?
Well, it's interesting. Tim Hankinson, who is at Indy 11, was here a few years back. And when he was leaving to get the job, he reached out to me. He told the owner, hey, I got a guy that might be interested in coming. And, you know, Tim knew my background of sort of, you know, jumping around the world and doing things short term, long term, and in different parts of the world. And you know, I got to meet the owner, and we talked, and, you know, this was probably, gosh, I would say a year to a year and a half ago, maybe. And, you know, it looked like we were close. I was going to come about a year and a half ago, but I had just stepped away from being the assistant head coach with the Sacramento Republic. I just stepped away from that to run the academy in Sacramento. So it was one of those things where it wasn't the right timing. And so we sort of let it slide. And then this past December, I'd always stayed in contact with the management of the club, just to, you know, stay in contact, and because they would ask some various things from me, you know, what about, you know, can we move this player somewhere, because they knew my contacts in the U.S. So we stayed in contact from that perspective, and we started talking again in December, and even in December, it's like, yeah, maybe I might do it, might not. I had some other opportunities in the U.S. at the time, so weighing those options. And then January looked like, oh, it's probably not going to happen. It's just not the right timing again, various things. And then I think we both made one last little push in February, and literally we sort of just said, okay, let's do it. And we did it. And, so now I'm head coach and technical director of Montego Bay United Football Club.
And how's it going right now? I mean, obviously, it's you know, right now, you getting started and having the players getting accustomed to your style of play, your philosophy of play. How's it going right now in the Red Stripe League?
Well, actually, it's quite interesting because the league down here is the same calendar as the European calendar. So when I came in, there was only about 10 games left to go in the season. So we've actually just finished up the regular season, and we finished third in the league, which is good in general, but the club has high expectations, and that's what I really like about the club. The club has, in the last 3 years, have won the championship twice. You know, finishing third was an accomplishment simply by the fact that they had been, you know, on a high for so long, and been successful. So yeah, I mean, that is it. And now it's really time to start scouting and recruiting and getting prepared for next year, because the preseason will open up in middle of July. We're hoping to do a U.S. tour, actually in Florida, of all places. Hopefully going to play 4 games in Florida over the course of a month while we're in preseason in Florida.
I see. And how different was the team from a tactical standpoint compared to when you brought it, when you came in? Were you able to make any changes so deep into the season? Or is this like, hey, let's just survive and then regroup towards the end of the season and try and see what we can do next year? I mean, how does that work out on your end?
Yeah, it was, because, you know, anybody that knows sport, anybody that knows football, the key to staying on top is having some continuity, but not having overly too much continuity in the sense that you don't make a lot of changes. And the one thing I felt like, from my personal opinion, is that if you look at the group now, there's probably, I would say, you know, 75% of all the players have been here for at least 4 years. So this past year, after coming off the championship last year, there was basically no influx of players, no influx of new players, new blood, new desire to win it again. So that made it difficult for the group to repeat. And then when I came in, the team was kind of on a downward slide. So it was my goal to really steady the ship and not to take away from what they've done. Because at the end of the day, in the last 3 years, they've been in 3 finals and they won 2 of them. So we gotta say, let's be honest here, they've had a good run, but we all know how fast a good run can come tumbling down. So it was really kind of steady the ship, get the team defensively better and really more or less just try to get through this year and make it for and be prepared for next year.
I'm not sure how it works out when it comes to and I'm speaking of course with Rod Underwood, the head coach of Montego Bay. I'm not sure how it works, Rod, in the Caribbean more than anything else. The stigma of coming in, I mean, we saw it earlier in this calendar or in this football calendar year when Swansea ends up hiring Bob Bradley and what ended up happening there. And, of course, the stigma of the American coach abroad. Is that the same, especially in a country, in a part of the world that has such an influence from England, saying, well, you know, this guy comes in, okay, fine, you know, but he's a Yank. I mean, was there that perception that you had to overcome first to be able to buy the team over, or is that not the case in the Caribbean?
Well, it obviously, you're right about it, having a huge, huge England, the English have a huge influence on the country and pretty much everything from education to the side of the road they drive on to the football, you name it, you know. But what I had in my favor, to be honest, is that you're talking about the U.S. and U.S. and Mexico, as we know, are the two powers in the CONCACAF and the North American region. So that was definitely was a help. And also, obviously, my experience at the professional level in the U.S., you know, being an assistant in Portland in the USL days, working in their academy. And I'd spent time in the Caribbean in Trinidad and Tobago before, so that helped bring some legitimacy there. And then, obviously, most recently, winning a championship with Sacramento in 2014. So, you know, at the end of the day, this club is all about winning. This club is a winning club. And so anybody that's coming to help them win, they're all for it.
I mean, I just wanted to say that. So, I mean, it comes straight out of your mouth, and to add to that, and it's not just, you know, me using this as like a publicity forum or platform for you, but you're, I guess, for lack of a better term, a bit atypical from the usual American coaching background, because you do. And you have, throughout your career, gone abroad and looked for experience and looked for knowledge and talked to different coaches to see what you can obtain. So, I mean, that as well must have helped out a great deal because of the people you've known and the people that you've been able to learn from as well.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, look, for me, football is really important. But, you know, I always tell people football is not the end all. I mean, I love my family. I love my I have a strong faith-based life, and so all that's important. But, you know, having a chance to travel the world, I mean, and learn from different football countries and football coaches is really important. But for me, it doesn't really matter where I coach. I just want to coach, and I want to be the head coach. I want to be the guy leading the team, not because I think that I'm good enough. I feel like those are the talents that I have to lead a team. And so that's why I say it's really important. And, you know, and also too, you know, for me, when I did take the job here now most recently, I had some opportunities, you know, to stay in the U.S. But to be frank, they weren't the opportunities that I felt that my abilities were built for. So I decided not to take them. And that's what it was, you know, because in the U.S. I felt like I mean, worst case scenario for me, I mean, it's going to sound arrogant, but I'm not an arrogant guy for the people that know me. I mean, there's no reason why I wasn't coaching in the USL at a head coaching position. So, you know, I don't know the reasons why that is. I don't really try to read into those. But I look at it, too, as a sense that, look, this door opened up. I jumped on it. And now I'm going to, you know, build something here and make this club very successful.
What's been the most difficult thing for you, Rod, to be able to adjust to being in another country? I mean, not with you, I guess that's kind of a easy question, or I guess a difficult question, knowing how cosmopolitan an individual you are. I mean, of course, me speaking to you from a personal experience standpoint, what's been difficult to, you know, being from an assistant to being a head coach now, but also being a head coach abroad and getting the opportunity to do it. I mean, is there a different expectation? Is there a different, bit of responsibility that you're taking upon yourself, be it necessary or unnecessary?
Well, I think first and foremost for me, I mean, I look at the way I coach. I mean, I first and foremost make sure that the players know that I care for them. That's first and foremost. You know, I take coaching as leadership. I take coaching as leadership, teaching, and parenting. I look at it from all those perspectives. So I do feel like coaches need to be leaders in the sense of understanding their players' personal lives, understanding their players' struggles, what their struggles are, what their family lives are, what they also enjoy doing. And because I believe that the number one thing in leadership, and I believe that's coaching, is if players and people believe that you care for them, you will get so much more out of them. If they just feel like you're using them to get to an end, they won't give you everything they have. So that's number one. So how do you do that coming to a different country? You do that first, got to learn the culture as quick as you can. Obviously, since they speak English, that makes it a lot easier. But understand the culture, you know, understand the culture. You know, and what I've done right away is just try to understand their personal lives, understand, you know, jump right into eating the food and, you know, just being part of the culture and not being a foreign guy standing on the outside. And I think that's gone a long ways to get this group, you know, to buy into what I want to do.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's one thing that you mentioned there about understanding culture, and it's quite a stark and harsh reality, you know, that you end up seeing, especially outside of the United States, whether people want to see it. Well, yeah, there is poverty in the United States, but you start to see the poverty in some areas of the world, in Jamaica being one of them, and you start to see, well, this is where a lot of my players came from, so I understand what they're going through or what they're looking to do. I mean, you become that father figure in the clubhouse, in the dressing room for them. And at the same time, you have to keep them grounded as well. I mean, that's kind of an interesting role that you have to juggle around a bit more as a player and as a coach, or as a former player and now as a coach, and trying to keep your players centered because of all the temptations that are around, because just a little bit of success with a lot of those young players that are coming from really adverse, you know, family situations, social situations, puts you in a situation where you have to kind of ground them a little bit. Say, hey, you know what? No, it's not just that. There's more to it than that if you keep working.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, look, it's very, very clear. It's very, very clear for me. Character is the number one thing that I look for in players. And people say, well, how do you do that? Look, simply, I have no interest. I have no interest in dealing with players that I've got to manage because they're out till 3 or 4 in the morning every night, or they're out drinking, or they're out womanizing, and all. I have no interest in that. I have no interest in that whatsoever. They just it doesn't work. I mean, we can go down the list of players. Yeah, they might have had a beautiful career as a player, but look at their lives now. For me, it's not just about the football. It's about how does the football impact them, their lives, that they can go out and impact their culture, their community, and change lives by being successful footballers and being successful people. That's how I deal with every single player.
That's always been your not just with players, but just, you know, how you handle yourself out, on the pitch and outside of it. So I mean, it's kind of a reflection of you in certain senses. And so now, American coaching in general, when you're on the outside looking in, what is going on with American coaching in general that is getting the negative stigma, that's getting the unfair looks, that's getting the maybe the lack of opportunities, and of course some going abroad for whatever reason. Where, you know, being on the outside looking in, where do you see, you know, those things going? Where do you see the future of American coaching?
Well, look, let's be honest here. There's a lot of good coaches in the U.S. You know, there's a lot of there's plenty of coaches I have a lot of time for, and there's, you know, because even in my mind as I try to build this, I say, okay, if I did have the opportunity to bring a coach from the U.S. to be on my staff, who would I bring? And there's a lot of good coaches out there. There's a lot of good coaches out there. There's no question about that. But you have to start from the bottom. And you have to start from the bottom when you talk about youth coaching and you talk about youth. The difficult thing is the pay-to-play model, which makes it very difficult because so many coaches compromise their ideals, because at the end of the day, people are paying. The pay-to-play model pays their salary, takes care of their family, takes care of their livelihood. So that puts a lot of pressure on the coach to make some decisions sometimes that they would normally make if they're just in an environment where the best kids were on the team regardless of money or no money. So that has a huge effect on it. And coaches that are in that system for a long time, we all know that life becomes habits and it becomes habitual. So if they do get the chance to step out of that, it's a huge relief for them. But then they also have to understand they have to get fit for a new type of coaching. It's like players have to get fit. The coaches have to get fit with their minds and how they approach things, because now the pressure doesn't come from the parent who's paying the money or the kid who's paying the money. The pressure comes from the media. The pressure comes from the ownership. The pressure comes from within, from your players, because, you know, at that level, players know who's good and who's bad or not, and they know who should be on the pitch playing or not. Whereas, you know, in the pay-to-play model of America, where so many of our good coaches get their way of learning, they don't have those same kind of pressures. Look, I tell you what I learned in a short time here. This is Montego Bay United is a football club that getting a tie on the road is not success. That's not success. The expectation is to win every single match, and win every single match in the way that you want to win it and the way that you want to play. Even if you do win the match and you don't win in the way that's the way that the club wants to win it, there's conversations you will have. That's the difference. That is the difference. That is the difference. That it is. I mean, give you an idea. I mean, it takes me approximately after a match. Mm-hmm. It takes me approximately 20 minutes to leave the pitch because I'm doing interviews. I'm doing interviews before, you know, players are doing interviews before the game throughout the week. It's a football crazy country. It is unbelievable, and so there's pressures every single way that you go, and so you have to be sharp all the time. Whereas as an American coach coaching you, you don't have to be sharp all the time. Even, you know, coaching the Elite Academy stuff, which I helped set up the Sacramento Public Academy, you don't have to be sharp every day. You don't have to be, because the pressures aren't there. The expectation of a good look here in this country, the owner comes out and watches training. Not to be in your business, but he's putting his money into a club. And he wants to know that the team is training well. So whereas a lot of times in the U.S., even in the USL, because I've been there, some players can take a day off. Or you don't have that luxury here. You don't have that luxury here because, look, you're scrutinized in training. You're scrutinized in the matches, home and away. And that's just the life of it.
I mean, it's completely true what you're saying. I mean, as far as, you know, and I've been there, so I totally get it. And I, of course, have my relationships with the press down there quite evident because they're asking questions all the time. Hey, Rod, why is so-and-so playing and so-and-so not playing? Why is so-and-so scoring? Or why is so-and-so missing chances? And, you know, and the whole plethora of questions that you're constantly asked. So I can only imagine, you know, after a draw, especially. I mean, you're you know, a draw for Montego Bay United at the local papers, even the national ones like the Jamaica Gleaner or the Jamaica Observer, they're saying, hey, what's going on with the team? They've drawn twice in a row. What's going on? I totally get that. Uh-huh. So I mean, and you're totally understanding it too from your perspective. So
yeah, so, it's a total different expectation. I mean, it's just, I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I'm just saying this is the reality, you know, and I was talking to someone the other day. I said, "Look, we're the crazy ones as coaches for signing up for something like this." So you know,
and sometimes even bring your family too. I mean, a lot of coaches take their family wherever they go, and you know, they could be there for 4 years. They could be there for 4 weeks. I mean, that's the crazy thing about the profession of coaching and the sacrifices and the dreams that everybody, you know, in the United States and every other part of the world looks to do. So I mean that to me. That's crazy, but you know, I mean, I you know, tip your hat off to you because there's people like you out there that are willing to make that sacrifice and that jump.
Well, it's, you know, it's this. I mean, when you look at, let's take the U.S. Developmental Academy, and again, what U.S. Soccer has done with the Developmental Academy has been exceptional. I love the I personally love the academy. I love my time there. I loved getting close to some of the people at U.S. Soccer and hearing their vision and hearing their, and they've got a great vision, they got a lot of good things that are working. But until each of these professional clubs hold their directors, hold their coaches accountable, that players are produced and are contributing on a consistent basis to the first team, year after year after year, without that pressure, it leaves a little bit that the coaches can have a little bit more time. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying fire people and get rid of them after 1 year or 6 months or whatever. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, look, fire, when you want to make shape goal, you put it in fire. If you want to shape players and coaches, you put them in an environment that consistently stresses them. And that's what's ultimately going to get American soccer where it needs to be. Because look, there's nobody in this part of the world that has the infrastructure, that has the money, that has the player pool, that has the coaches pool that U.S. has. Nobody. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. But some of these other countries are holding these players, holding these coaches to the fire so often. Either sometimes it burns out the best ones and you lose them, or it brings some of the guys you didn't think that were great. It puts them into a place where they really say, well, I can really do this, and they push and they go. So it's one of those things that it's just, U.S. is coming. It's coming. It's time. I mean, what it was when I was a kid and what it is now is night and day. So I'm pleased about where it's going. But if we're ultimately going to be the kind of country that we say we want to be on the world stage, the pressure's got to be greater at every level.
And it's interesting you say that, Rob, because you happen to be in a country. I just saw a documentary a couple of days ago from The Guardian about how Jamaican track develops their young up-and-coming sprinters and middle-distance runners and the like. And yeah, they hold their feet to the fire, I mean, intensely in Jamaica as far as the high school and the youngsters getting into the junior levels of athletics is concerned. I mean, you're seeing that firsthand based on where you're living right now. And to me, I mean, it's kind of like that to an extent that that U.S. soccer has to start looking without obviously burning out the amount of youngsters that get burned out in Jamaican track. But still, I mean, yeah. I agree with you with what you're saying there. That makes a great deal of sense as far as where they are and where they need to be in order to achieve what they want to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. I mean, and again, I'm not here to say anything negative about U.S. soccer because, look, I love my country. I love the football that's developing. I love all of that. But all I'm saying is that the experience I'm having now relative to the experience I've had before, it's helping me grow as a coach. But here's the thing. The problem that this holding people to the fire is there must be a balance. There must be a balance. You can't go. You got to let kids be kids. You got to let coaches say, you know what, I'm going to take a little time off. I'm going to go away with my family. I'm going to do this. But it can't be go. There's got to be a balance so that when people return back to the fire, they're nice and protected because they're ready to go again.
And they have a better capability of seeing where they're at and where they need to go. I guess you have that refreshed mindset and things are a little bit clearer, I guess. And one thing that I saw, and this is just me just adding on to what you're saying, I happened to be at the under-17s just a couple of weeks ago, commentating them for CONCACAF, and a lot of people are putting a great deal of pressure, maybe sometimes unnecessary pressure. Have you seen that as well, that a lot of unnecessary pressure is being put on kids that are 15, 16, 17 years old? One reason I'm saying is because after the first Mexico-U.S. game, you started seeing a lot of people in the U.S. media starting to hail Josh Sargent as the next U.S. star. I'm like, wait a second, hold on, he's 16 years old. Chill out a little bit. Let's let him grow a little bit. Is that a big factor that you've seen in the past or in the recent past?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, we got a kid on our team. He's 18. He's been called into the national team twice. And he's not mentally ready for it. But everyone around is saying that, oh, he's the next great big thing. He's going to lead our country. Look, he's 18. He's not ready for that. Let him grow. Let him mature. But when you put these kids on a pedestal so soon, it is so difficult. And especially if the kids don't come from a grounded environment. If they don't come a grounded environment and you put them on a pedestal that really increases their self-esteem and their self-awareness, you're asking for trouble. No question about it. You got to let kids develop. You got to let them develop. Just go to the big clubs. Go to the big clubs. Go to Barcelona. Go to Real Madrid. Go to Manchester United in their heyday when they were bringing youngsters through. Go look at them and look how they were treated and look how they were pampered and look how they were shielded from things that would ultimately stop them from becoming the player they needed them to be for the investment they put in so they could reap their investment.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, the two examples you can give right now are Kylian Mbappe and Christian Pulisic. Many think, oh, they just burst onto the scene. No, they didn't. They were gradually given a taste of that. Pulisic wasn't just thrown on there, say, okay, kid, save us, bail us out over Borussia Dortmund. He was given a start here. He came off the bench there. He had his taste, and he understood it. And plus, obviously, the grounding that he had through his family and his and everyone around him helped a great deal with Mbappe to a similar extent. So, I mean, it's all of that. It's just giving him a little taste. This is what you can do and seeing how the kid responds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You don't have
no question.
You don't have to agree with me all the time, Rod, but I mean,
it's true though. It's true. It's so true.
But overall, you've seen it. So, I mean, in a lot of the things that are saying that I'm saying, I'm kind of echoing them from what you've told me in the past, so more than anything else.
Look, the reality behind sport and the reality behind elite players in any sport is time. It's time. Players need time to grow and develop as people. Players need time to grow and develop as human beings, bottom line. And if we don't give them that time, they won't achieve what they need to achieve. It's simple. Getting better at passing the ball, it's time. It's repetition. Better at shooting the ball, it's repetition. Better at defending, it's repetition. And it's doing it over and over, repeating and repeating and repeating until it becomes second nature.
Rod, man, I wish I could talk to you for hours on end because, I mean, you have just such a great wealth of knowledge. And again, I'm happy as can be for your job over at Montego Bay. I wish you the best of success over there, and hopefully, you know, seeing you lead that team to CONCACAF Champions League, and lots of success, Rod. Where can people, you know, I mean, do you do any type of content for the club? Do you do anything on your own, or as, you know, do any speaking engagements or anything like that we should know of?
Nothing yet for the club. I mean, I haven't done anything yet. It's been a short time. And again, you know, that's part of the reason why I'm here, because look, Montego Bay has had success. And we really, I mean, one of the reasons why we're looking at doing a month-long preseason in the U.S. is simply because we're trying to grow the brand. And so we're going to look at every avenue possible to grow the brand, you know, because there's a huge Jamaican population on the Eastern Seaboard in the U.S. And there's some very big companies that are, you know, also and look to invest in our club. So we're going to try to begin to branch this thing out and make it something really special.
And you know what? I believe you have the chance to do it. And best of luck. Where can we contact you on social media to get just ask you questions and just, you know, tap into that that wonderful wealth of knowledge you have?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. Those are the two things I use: Facebook and Twitter. And it's just Cut Inside, just like on the football field. Cut Inside. That's where I'm on Twitter.
Rod, man, again, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here on Beyond the Pitch. And again, if I'm in Jamaica, I'm definitely going to stop by and catch a match over in Mo Bay and see what's up and see how you're doing. Best of luck, man. I appreciate it.
All right, great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right.